Welcome to The Telegram. I'm Tim Stanley. George Osborne may well be gorging himself on Byron burgers, but the rest of us are going to have to tighten our belts even more. The Spending Review has called for an additional £11.5 billion in spending cuts, and the Chancellor has refused to rule out raising taxes after the next election. But despite all the potential misery, it's Labour that's really hurting. The new political consensus is that we have to control spending and borrowing, but the Labour front bench just doesn't seem to entirely get it. One of the Telegraph's bloggers, Dan Hodges, said that after the spending review, Ed Bull sleeps with the fishes. Why? Because Labour can't deny that it would borrow more, and because, for all its newfound toughness, it can't help but instinctively oppose every welfare reform it encounters. To discuss this, I'm joined in the studio by Peter Oborne and Mary Riddell. Peter, is it such a big deal or not?
Well, obviously, it's a completely meaningless event in terms of economics. I mean, I can't really agree with you. I mean, we're talking about a budget in 2015-16 of £745 billion, and it shaved £11.5 billion off that. I mean, it's a statistically rounding error.
Right.
And, you know, this was the year when we were supposed to return to structural balance. I think that the forecast for the borrowing that in 15-16 is £87 billion, which is a phenomenal sum of money. I mean, it's incredibly vacuous political event economically, and it's a fantastically interesting thing going on. There's a sort of collaboration between the left-wing media, the kind of economically illiterate political commentators, and Mr. Osborne to sort of create the notion that there's something incredibly important going on, a tremendous amount of axing. I mean, Don McIntyre today talked about swinging cuts. I mean, Don, you've been around for 30 years. I mean, these aren't swinging. They're not cuts, scarcely cuts at all. I mean, because of Steve Richards, look at it. I mean, he talks about the...
This is in The Independent.
No, in The Independent, Steve Richards. He talks about the spending round that was conducted with such destructive speed by inexperienced ministers in the summer of 2010. Steve, the spending went up in 2010. It didn't go down. I mean, go back to school and come... And so what you have, very interesting, Paul Johnson, the IFS, talked about astonishing cuts yesterday on the BBC.
Right.
It's wonderful of Osborne because it gives the impression that he's cutting stuff, which, in fact, is not happening on a statistically meaningful way at all.
Mary.
Well, I think he is cutting, but in a very narrow sphere. So everybody's got, you know, sort of horrible acronyms for everything now. So the debate, Peter will correct me if I'm wrong, seems to have divided up between DEL, which is departmental limits, versus AMI, which is annually managed expenditure, and how the two sort of balance out. Now, the Chancellor obviously has chosen to focus on departments. And while the greater, you know, sort of welfare cap, this rolling four-year one or whatever it's going to be, is rather vague and may indeed be an entirely rhetorical device.
It is a
rhetorical device. That is official now. But thank you, Peter. But
Is it a rhetorical device? Was itself a rhetorical question, I think you'll find. Carry
but, on. But some of the individual departmental cuts, I think, will be quite severe. I mean, if you look at local government now, if one is interested in swimming pools and public libraries and so on, then very, very tricky for them. Health and social care. I mean, social care is the responsibility, of course, of local government. Is in very, very grave problems. And what George Osborne's done is to basically to nick £2 billion, as far as I can see, out of the health budget, throw it away of social care. So he's basically trying to sort of plug a hole in a very short-term way, given that he's also cutting local government, while at the same time drive your coach and horses through the NHS ring fence.
Ah, now I saw you wrote this, that the ring fence is essentially over. Really?
Well, ring fences are of their nature permeable. So on international development, for example, you know, bits of development money get hived off to other departments. But yes, I think it is quite significant. If he's actually taking money out of health and putting it into social care, there's a bit of double counting of figures going on, but not being too technical about it, in basic terms, that's what he's doing. And I think, yeah, the consensus seems to be, I wasn't aware of the figures when I wrote that, so I was hoping very much that I was right. But having looked at them and courted some other opinion, there is, I think, a general consensus a hole has appeared in the ring fence.
So really, actually, Peter, more is going on than you suggest. At the very least, there is a spiritual commitment in this country to reducing spending.
Maybe spiritual, but it's purely spiritual.
Right.
I mean, I listened to Mary, and it's very interesting. The left, she joins McIntyre and Richards and virtually every other left-wing writer is on a long list of George Osborne's useful idiots who are there to confirm the fabricated impression that he is cutting.
Mary's just useful, she's no idiot. Peter.
Well,
she's very useful.
Very helpful.
Are you denying that he's cutting spending?
In any meaningful way, yes. In fact, spending is going down in real terms over this Parliament by 2.7%. We are borrowing an extra 600. I know these figures don't mean anything to the left. 600 billion. I know this is. So it doesn't really matter. I know that you're all economically illiterate on the left. But 600 billion is being borrowed over these 5 years. And now you have the audacity to complain about the cut.
Mary,
that is absolutely typical of the arrogance of the right, something that I hope the left would never indulge in. I certainly wouldn't. Of kind of bad mouthing the opposition. You are, of course, perfectly right that borrowing is going up and all the rest of it, that this yes. may be a tiny amount. It may be lost in the roundings if you look through one side of the prism at it. I'm trying to look through the other side and saying that actually, if you are a pensioner who can't get social care, if you are a welfare claimant who is going to have to wait 7 days, and remember these are people who fall in and out of work, so they're going to maybe have to wait 7 days.
No, I don't agree with you about that.
Seven times a year. It's not a one-off event.
This is saying that rather than waiting 3 days, you have to now wait 7 days.
Exactly, sorry, I should have spelled that out. So all I'm saying, Peter, is that there are people whom this will affect very directly, and so to sit there in some airy-fairy way and dismiss it as lost in the roundings and all, you know, sort of smoke and mirrors doesn't mean a thing. Actually, in real people's lives, it does mean a thing.
There will come a day when you're going to wake up and the country is going to wake up. I mean, you are living in a dreamland, a Brownian dreamland, where money budgets rise year after year, where there's endless, limitless abundance, when the British state can pay for every conceivable benefit. They haven't even started doing pensions. They haven't looked scarcely at welfare. They haven't gone after, despite your protestations, the NHS. Do you genuinely believe that we can go on borrowing ad infinitum at the present, where we seem to be £120 billion a year? Do you believe that?
Mary.
Certainly not, but I think for as long as...
You do believe... Well, in that one...
No,
well,
no,
we need
no,
cuts,
I don't
then.
Believe
Peter,
that.
Peter, Peter, Mary, let Mary answer.
While there is no growth, while tax revenues are going down, then inevitably we get deeper and deeper into debt and the whole problem carries on. But since you mention it, let's take pensions. I mean, absolutely... Pensions have to be addressed. We are into a doomsday scenario if the triple lock prevails and people get older and older and live for longer and longer. That alone is enough to bankrupt the country. Yet the right, I've noticed, is very silent on this. The Chancellor has said nothing. He has excluded it specifically from his cap. You know, Ed Balls may have dropped the ball and sort of fumbled what he said and not been very precise, but at least he has sort of grasped that problem and started to look at it. And I noticed that the Chancellor was very quick to follow, certainly on the allowances for wealthier pensioners. Yeah.
Peter, the Chancellor doesn't agree with you.
No, I think this Chancellor, it seems to me, to be out of his depth in terms of the scale of the crisis. He's greatly helped by the weakness of the opposition. I mean, I agree with you about pensioners, by the way. I mean, that's the triple lock, which the Chancellor himself introduced. It's going to cost the country £45 billion over the next 10 to 15 years. I mean, and he introduced it after 2010 election. I mean, all the more amazing. And good, well done, Ed Balls. It's the first sensible thing he's said, actually, since becoming Shadow Chancellor, that we have a look at pensions. But that is what is going to happen. And this was a calculated exercise in not addressing the basic economic problem this nation faces. It was a It was extraordinarily reckless and irresponsible in a way. And it does raise a question about what the election is going to be about. Because if unless Grove does, I mean, you know, there is he's relying, the Chancellor, on enormous Grove returning in the next 2 years. And if it does, then his numbers might look quite sensible. We're going to go into the election with this massive structural deficit, which was meant to have disappeared by 2015. Are the politicians of all parties going to talk honestly about pensions, about I'm afraid, pruning the NHS, about raising taxes? I fully accept that's going to have to happen. And about creating a new relationship between the individual and the state.
Well, I think that's right. And of course, the question of raising taxes, neither side want to look at for the moment. But I mean, I do think that we haven't talked very much about the need for a sort of proper infrastructure programme. And so, I mean, the Chancellor's made great play of that. And of course, we're hearing more about it today. But in fact, an awful lot of this money has been pre-announced and stuff. So that really is smoke and mirrors. But basically, I mean, capital spending, infrastructure spending is falling in this Parliament. And I think without that, we're not going to get growth. We're going to carry on, as you suggest, Peter, with the same old structural deficit. What I just wanted to mention, because we haven't touched on this, is what actually the voters are making of all this. And I think there the story is quite worrying for Labour. I mean, for all the difficulties, some of which we've rehearsed now, that the government finds itself in, then there is very little sense that they're moving over to Labour. On the other hand, there are quite worrying signs for Labour, I think. The government still edges it on economic competence. And I think YouGov figures on how optimistic people feel about what's going to happen to them and their households over the next year are showing a gradual upward trend.
Yeah.
So, in other words, much as he may have bungled everything in the eyes of the opposition and indeed in the eyes of some Conservative supporters, George Osborne has not yet comprehensively blown it in the eyes of the electorate.
Ultimately, is this all about personality? Is that why people are holding out on Ed Miliband? I mean, having said that, Peter, although you attack, I presume, Labour's position on spending, you have yourself said that you see something in Ed Miliband that means he could transcend all these political problems.
I do, actually, and I still think it's possible. I don't think that many people, certainly not the politicians, certainly not Mr. Osborne, certainly not the Prime Minister, certainly not my colleagues in the press, certainly not Mary here on my left, understand the nature of the predicament we're in. This is a generation, it is a sort of event which happens once in a lifetime, if not less, but often than that. We are living through something comparable to the Great Depression of the 1930s. It's a crisis of capitalism. And we may emerge with a different kind of social and political structure. What happened in 2008 has only just begun. This is the other thing. People think it was a discrete event. We're in a new system. Mm-hmm. And we don't actually know what system's going to emerge from it. The most important thing by far last week was the rise in 10-year yields. By far and away, it looks like this very, very cheap government debt is going to cease. Once that happens, we're moving into a new environment. And I think, oddly enough, my impression from talking to people around Ed Miliband is that he does actually kind of have some sort of dawning awareness, some genuine agonised awareness that there is a structural crisis in our economic system. George Osborne is just continuity Brown. He's part of the neoliberal. He hasn't woken up to the fact any more than Gordon Brown or Ed Balls have that the neoliberal consensus that established itself after 1980, 79 and 83 has come to an end.
Mary Riddell, you get the last word. I think you've earned it. Ed Miliband. Ed Miliband, man of the new millennium.
Well, I think he could be. I mean, I don't think that... I think both Miliband and Ed Balls are slightly tainted, if that's not too strong a word, by their association with Gordon Brown. You know, they worked for him for years. They were part of his project. But I think also, I don't think it's personally about either of them. I agree with Peter. I think Miliband has tried at least to sort of grasp the magnitude of the problem. He sees that the world has changed and that politics must inevitably change with it. The difficulty for Labour, rather than the personalities involved, is that I think at this stage of the Parliament, 37% of people who are asked blame Labour for the country's woes. That's 10% higher as a blame group than anybody else, which is very high for this stage of the Parliament. So I think just the proximity with defeat and indeed with 2008 and the events that followed make things more difficult for Ed Miliband. But I hope he will be man of the millennium. I think he stands a fair chance.
Mary Riddell and Peter O'Bourne, thank you both very much. For more opinion and commentary, you can find us at telegraph.co.uk